Ravens have been so good for so long that now that they're not making the playoffs very frequently, people are upset. And, you know, it's, you, when you spoil us with being good for so long, when you're not, it's, we're not going to be happy.
Give the media free pizza on Wednesdays, and then you look for great stories afterwards. Exactly. It works every time.
So did it work?
Ravens Super Bowl 2018.
Welcome into the lounge, all of us, all of you fans out there. This is a big one. It's the fan episode, Garrett.
Well, you know, oftentimes we try to figure out who the guest is going to be, and we have conversations about should we get this player, this coach, or whatever. And this actually opportunity, I wish we could take credit for it, but we had a little help.
Yes.
In this regard.
It's true. So we have the co-host of the Purple Rain Show, at Purple Rain Show, Phil Gentile, with us here in the quote-unquote studio.
In the lounge.
In the lounge. And he is going to be the fan representative. He's the voice of the fans, all right?
So more importantly, I got to eat in the cafeteria. That's true. That's the only reason I'm here. I'm going to leave now.
Well, that was our tactic to butter you up. Because, you know, we've seen the anger and the frustration on social media.
Oh, yeah.
Fans are a little cheesed right now. And so we figured we'd bring you in and to butter you up, nothing better. Yep. We know, as fellow journalists, we know the best way to get a good write-up is to feed somebody.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like, you know, teams and organizations have used this trick for years. You give the media free pizza on Wednesdays, and then you look for great stories afterwards. Exactly. It works every time.
So did it work?
Ravens Super Bowl 2018. Yes. Yeah. All the Ravens fans voted. We had a big meeting, and they picked me, so I'm glad I'm here, and hopefully I represent them well, you know?
Nice. I also want to talk about your Twitter handle a little bit. I hate J.J. Redick.
Yep.
Because we are definitely in the same boat on that.
Yeah.
I hate that guy.
Well, I actually don't hate him anymore.
What?
When I had my old website, which was called IHateJJRedick.com, I interviewed him. It was the nicest guy ever.
Hate when that happens.
Huge foodie, and I actually emailed him last week because something came across Twitter where he said he didn't believe in dinosaurs or something.
Yeah.
So I shot him an email like, what's up with this man?
Yeah.
He's like, it was taken out of context. I don't really believe that. I think it was just a joke.
Yeah.
But he actually emailed me, I think a couple years ago. His wife or his sister was coming to town, wanted some recommendations for crab cakes, so.
You sent him over to Johnny's, didn't you?
Jimmy's Seafood,
Jimmy's, not Johnny's.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jimmy.
He's a good guy, man. So
nice.
The Twitter handle grabs people's attention, which is good. So.
All right. Yeah. You got my attention. I'll have to let it go.
Yeah, you got
to
let it go. You got a good recommendation from him.
Exactly. All right. So, Phil, hit us with your biggest gripe that you have right now, all right? You have the iPad out here. How many gripes do you have listed on this bad boy?
I have a giant scroll of it. Actually, I don't have as many gripes as most fans do. A lot of fans are and you guys did a show a couple weeks ago about it. The continuity, you know, the Ravens have missed the playoffs 4 out of 5 years. Everyone knows that. Everyone listening knows that. You know, promoting Wink Martindale and then, you know, keeping Marty Morningweg on after a year that they had this season, fans are just upset. Fans want something different, and they see the teams in our division, they see some of the offenses around the league and what they can do, and then, you know, it's tough to watch the Ravens. If I wasn't a Ravens fan, I would not watch the Ravens, you know?
Right.
It's tough sometimes. They're not fun to watch, and they need some playmakers, but I think it goes back to the coaching staff. People aren't happy with it. I mean, I'm a Harbaugh fan. I think he's one of the top five, top ten at the worst coaches in the league, but, you know, we're spoiled. Ravens fans are spoiled. Just like I'm spoiled, this iPhone here has worked for me for 10 years.
Yeah.
It's never not worked. So when it stops working, I'm going to be pissed.
Right.
The Ravens have been so good for so long that now that they're, you know, not making the playoffs very frequently, people are upset. And, you know, it's
understandable.
You spoil us with being good for so long. When you're not, it's we're not going to be happy.
I can sense that and feel that, and I understand it. I mean, the continuity thing is definitely like an interesting question. That's why we kind of did a whole episode on that topic, because there is that sense of why you look at a team like the Steelers. The Steelers have one of the best offenses in the league. They go to the divisional round of the playoffs, and then they lose, and then they make a change in offensive coordinator.
Well, that's kind of unique circumstances.
It was.
That wasn't because of the offensives.
But there are teams that make those changes. I mean, the Titans went and they won a playoff game.
Yeah.
They fired their head coach. So like, there are teams that have had more success in recently. Than the Ravens that have made changes. And so, I mean, I understand the sense there. I think the one thing I said in the last episode is Wink is a change. Like, and I think that I'm excited to see what he does. Like, I'm excited to see what he does with this defense because I think that he will have an aggressive mentality that people will like.
Yeah, I'm going to hold off judgment. Yeah. I don't know anything about him, and I'm sure the press conference later today, you guys are going to ask him about his time in Denver.
Sure.
We talked about it during our fantastic lunch. Right. He didn't have the best players to work with. He had an aging Dawkins and Champ Bailey back there in the secondary, so I think he's got much more talent here to work with here, so I'm hoping, yeah, like I'm hoping it's something different because it's been the defense the last two seasons on the last play where we need them to stop, and they haven't gotten it done, and this defense was much improved this year, but, you know, when you can't come up with plays like, you know, in crunch time, it's the making and breaking your season. That's what that's what it's going to be.
I one thing that you mentioned that I agree with is this team needs to be more fun to watch. I think it's time for that. You know,
we need some playmakers.
It was all in on defense, right? And I get it, and I think you know, rightfully so. Baltimore is a fan base and a city that's built on defensive football. Mm-hmm. You know, we've all taken pleasure in that, right? Yep. And I think that the bet this year was make the defense really good. And it wasn't. Football decisions oftentimes are made to win games, not necessarily with the fan.
Of course.
You know, winning is what really helps fans the most.
Yes.
That's what attracts fans. But, you know, so it was really an emphasis on improving the defense. And my thinking was, all right, if the defense can be dominant, then this team's going to be really fun.
The offense can be good enough.
Right. But that meant the offense had to be good enough. The offense can't be the worst in the league like it was the first half of the season. It's just not palatable. It just turns you off. So I think if the offense is, like, okay, mm-hmm. and if we can get some playmakers that be even better, like when we had Ray Rice. When Ray Rice was here, he was a dynamic playmaker that you kind of you wanted to come see.
Yeah, you didn't. I mean, he could bust a run for a touchdown
exactly
at any point. And I think they were hamstrung this year with, you know, Danny Woodhead was a big pickup, and he got injured on the first drive of the season, was out for 7 or 8 weeks. Jeremy Maclin was a huge bust for us. I mean, a very talented player everywhere he's been and just really didn't produce. And I think Perriman's a big one. Perriman, everything we heard from every player on every interview, on every article you guys wrote, was that the coaching staff loved him. He was looking great. And he took a huge step outwards. 2016, he was actually pretty good. I think he had 40-some catches, 500, 600 mm-hmm. yards.
Yeah.
You know, he was trending upwards. But I just don't know if it's a lack of confidence. But, yeah, you got to get some players in here that can – you know, I hate to say fantasy football mentality, but that's what fans want to watch. I mean, you're asking people to spend their entire day. They get up early, they tailgate, they're not leaving the parking lots until, at best, 5 or 6 with so much traffic and stuff. You're devoting a whole day to go see this team. You want it to be entertaining. You know, I'm not going to go see a movie over and over again if it's not fun to watch. You know, that's the name of the game.
No, yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think that will be, in large part, what the strategy is this season. But really, if you just look at it logistically, the defense could probably line up and play right now. I mean, in terms of guys that you have coming back, the offense is clearly not the case.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of work is going to be put into that. And that actually leads us to, we have a bunch of fan questions here.
We do.
So it's not just, Phil, not you just know, me. You're the representative.
Yes.
But we want to hear you got some delegates, right. So this one comes from Cakes Mitchell. Cakes, thank you very much also for your first name.
Follow him on Twitter.
He is great. Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to roll into this audio question from Cakes.
Hey, Ryan and Garrett, this is Cakes Mitchell, and my question for you guys is that if the Ravens do draft a receiver high up in the draft, whether it be Calvin Ridley or someone else, do you think that puts a nail in the coffin for Breshad Perriman becoming a number one receiver?
So yeah, so Cakes wants to know, if you draft a wide receiver, is Breshad Perriman basically done?
My feeling on this is that Breshad's status doesn't have that much to do with what the Ravens do elsewhere. Like, I don't think that his role is going to be predicated on whether the Ravens draft a receiver in the first round, the second round. Like, the Ravens are going to draft at least one receiver, maybe two, and they are going to add at least one receiver, maybe two, in free agency. I mean, the only guys that are on this team going into next season right now are Chris Moore and Quincy Adebojo. All right, so that's it. Mike Wall's free agent. Maclin right now is on the team.
We're not sure.
Campanero's free agent. So my point is, they're going to add guys, and so Breshad, I think he's coming in. He's going to have to earn his spot regardless of what they do.
He's 24 years old, man.
Yeah, like, I mean, he's going to have to earn his spot. Like, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I think he's still, hopefully, has something to show us, you know, and I think he's earned at least a chance to make the roster next year, so.
But the expectation to me is, my point is, he's going to have to come into training camp next year and have to earn his place on the team.
Oh, for sure. Right, and the question is really specific to being a number one wide receiver, right? So to me, coming off of last season, his Perryman's second season, the Ravens really kind of pushed all the chips into the center of the table on Perryman this year. And they said, we're gonna make this guy a starter. We're going to give him the shot to be a starter opposite Mike Wallace. Now, they signed Macklin.
Yeah. They
signed Macklin late, so they kind of hedged their bets because Perryman got hurt. They added Macklin. They kind of added an insurance policy, right? But Perryman still got his opportunities at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
For sure. Now, he also got hurt, so that put him behind the eight ball. But I kind of disagree with you, Garrett. I think that if the Ravens do draft a first-round wide receiver, right, and let's say they sign somebody in free agency, Rashad Perryman might start training camp and minicamp on field two, working with the second-team offense.
But he could be on field two even if they don't add. They're going to add somebody. He could be on field two regardless.
It depends on when they add that person.
I think if they were to start right now, he's probably on field two right now. I mean, that's probably where it is.
I don't think so.
If they bring back Mike Wallace, and they bring back Campanaro.
You're in a position where he still has, kind of to what Phil was saying, he still has enough potential where you have to give him some opportunities. If they draft a first-round wide receiver and that guy needs to be ready to go week one, that guy's going to take some of those opportunities, practice opportunities, away from Perryman.
So if Perryman comes out here and he is on field two and they start out there in minicamp and in OTAs and go to training camp and he's lighting it up and he's
then you get the move to field one, baby.
Right. And so to me, it's all about him. It doesn't matter what the Ravens do elsewhere. It's all about him. It's always been all about him.
But it stinks that we have to rely on that, because since 2012, we've drafted one receiver in the first three rounds, and that's been Rashad Perryman. You look at a team like the Steelers, I mean, think of all the receivers they've produced. The Steelers have made Mike Wallace, Hines Ward, Juju Smith-Schuster, even go back to Plaxico and
Antonio Brown,
I mean, the biggest one. Just name after name, every year they take somebody. So, I mean, in today's NFL, I know you want to build on defense, but you gotta focus on offense to compete with these teams.
Did we name Martavis Bryant also?
Martavis Bryant?
Marcus Wheaton? Sammy Coates was another one, didn't really pan out. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think the Steelers have done an excellent job of A, firing bullets at the position, and B, you know, not every single one of those guys panned out, but when you fire enough bullets, some are definitely going to pan out. And Antonio Brown is obviously, that's kind of the anomaly of the situation, considering a lot of teams, including the Steelers, passed on him for five rounds.
Yeah.
And they've done a good job of developing these guys. So I think the Ravens have to take more shots. They have to take more shots early. Mm-hmm. Perryman, what hurts about Perryman right now is, that was a shot. That was a big shot. You use a first-round pick, and it wasn't only that first-round pick was really a waste for his first season because he was injured all year, but then he did just enough in his second year to make it tantalizing enough to give him a good shot his third year, which didn't pan out. So it kind of set the offense back this year as well. Yeah. So it's like been 3 years where you didn't really get enough out of a first-round pick, which is a major investment. So now it's almost like you're in a position where you have to the picks there were Perryman and KC the next year in the second round. And here we are two slash three years later, and we have the same needs, right? Wide receiver and inside linebacker.
Yeah.
And that's not the position you want to be in.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions about this. I mean, we just got on this topic, but I'm looking at the questions that we have from Twitter, and there's a ton of people that are asking essentially the same question, is what do you do to solve the wide receiver position? And what's the fix there? I mean, I kind of look at it, Ryan, we have talked about this, like, I look at wide receiver in a similar vein as I do cornerback last year.
I was just going to say that with the Brandon Carr thing. Yeah, bring in a veteran guy. There's, I mean, just looking at the list, there's Jarvis Landry, Allen Robinson, Sammy Watkins, Eric Decker, Terrell Pryor coming off a bad year, Marquise Lee. There's a ton of guys out there that can be had for pretty inexpensive costs.
I don't know, Landry's not going to come cheap, I can tell you that much.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you're going to have to break the bank for him.
Yeah, Allen Robinson probably ain't going to be cheap either.
Yeah,
I don't know if they're going to get any of those top. I bet it's going to be another guy that gets cut.
I think they should.
I think it's going to be a guy who gets cut.
Yeah, yeah. My wish list would be a guy like Jarvis Landry, pair him with a first or second round receiver and give Joe. I mean, I've been the biggest Joe hater over the last couple of years, but I couldn't this year. I mean, he had nothing to throw to. Mm-hmm. And when he was, the guys were dropping balls left and right. And he was coming off an injury. I mean, there were so many things to discount, you know, the offense with. I think you got to give this guy, if he can ever get over this elite moniker and the contract and all this stuff, that's another thing fans are upset about. They keep bringing up this contract, you know, it's par for the course. I think you have to give him some elite weapons.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the weapons that other teams have, you know, compared within the division. There's AJ Green, there's Antonio Brown.
None of these guys would start for the Browns.
Yeah.
I mean, the Browns have a better tight end, running back, and receiver. two receivers than we do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they didn't win a game all year.
Yeah, there's definitely a void at the playmaker area. I mean, so that actually goes to this question about free agency, which I think is an interesting topic. Marty Teller asked this question on Twitter, and Marty's question was, there's a great article a week or so ago in The Ringer, I'm not sure if you guys read it, that details how smarter teams are using free agency more and more effectively into the kind of a new era of the NFL. Should the Ravens be more aggressive in free agency in terms of the areas of need? So that's where you go out and get a guy like a Jarvis Landry. Do they need to change the approach? Well, first of all, I do think that the Ravens actually have quietly changed their approach in free agency than they had, you know, say go back 6 or 7 years. Like, everyone always says, the Ravens never make a splash. They never make a splash. And they kind of have made splashes. Like, they went out and they signed Tony Jefferson last year, who was the highest priced safety. They went out and got Danny Woodhead on the first day. Now, like, those moves didn't pan out the way necessarily that you'd, like, expect. You know, Woodhead missed most of the season, and Tony had his struggles earlier in the year. But, like, they had fired those bullets.
Eric Weddle?
Eric Weddle was a big one.
I think offensively, when you have some veteran guys, they just reach for some older wide receivers who were just a stopgap. You know, Steve Smith was awesome for us, and I wish he was a Raven his entire career.
Yeah.
But he only played 2 or 3 seasons here, then you have to replace him. And to keep doing that, you're going to strike out every once in a while. And to go back to the draft picks, and that's why free agency is so valuable. When you look at Arthur Brown, Correa, and Kafusi, and Perriman, and Matt Elam, if half of those guys work out, mm-hmm. you know, half of those defensive players work out, this defense is another level, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, then you don't have to spend money on the Weddles and Jeffersons of the world. As much as I love those guys,
yeah.
you can invest that into a receiver, and then that just kind of snowballs.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if you hit on Elam and, say, Terrence Brooks, who they drafted, I think, the next year, then you don't need Weddle and Jefferson, and then you can go and get that receiver.
Yep.
So, like, I'm kind of interested to see if the Ravens do jump into the receiver big spending market this year. Like, they don't have a ton of cap space, so it's going to be tough to get a Jarvis Landry. If he wants $14 or $15 million, like, that's the Ravens are probably out on that. Ravens are probably out on that.
Well, what was Wallace last year? He was 9 or 10.
Mike Wallace?
Mike Wallace.
Well, no, Mike.
Because they picked up his second option.
Yeah, I think he was
pricey.
Around 7.
Was it around 7?
Yeah, he was around 7 last year, which, I mean, you're talking double for Jarvis Landry.
If it was 7, then that's double.
Yeah.
It's tough. I mean, this team is it's paying for Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco ain't cheap, to kind of your point before.
Yeah, yeah.
And but there, you know, I get that all the time too when I hear from fans is, well, we pay Joe so much, blah blah blah. And Joe has, you know, for what he's gotten paid, he hasn't played up to that. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any arguing that. Yeah. You know, he gets paid to be a top five quarterback, or like a top five quarterback, and he hasn't played like a top five quarterback. But there's no other alternative, right? No. Like, the Ravens weren't going to let Joe Flacco walk after the Super Bowl season and go with Tyrod Taylor. That would have been insane.
Yes.
And that's just that was the going rate for what a starting quarterback, especially one coming off and winning a Super Bowl, who you're like, wow.
It was a perfect storm.
Yeah, it was a perfect storm. And now the Ravens, they had no option but to extend him. You really had to, because they couldn't keep paying that contract in the latter years of it. It was outrageous. It would have totally hamstrung you for 3 years.
Yep.
So they had to roll it over. And, you know, it takes up a good amount of the salary cap.
Yeah.
Now, I think that if you put better weapons around Joe, to our point, if you invest to get some younger, cheap options, then Joe can perform like what you're up to par for what you're paying him. But it hasn't happened yet.
No, and I mean, you look around some of the quarterbacks in the league, I would much rather have Joe than 15 of the 32 whatever quarterbacks. And, after the first half of the season, I think he looked pretty good over the last seven or eight games. So, you know, hopefully we can hang our hat on that, and our boy Marty can bring it home.
Yeah.
We're big Marty fan.
Well, while we're talking quarterback, how about this one? Here's an interesting thought, and this question comes from Twitter, H211E19. So remember that one.
Computer.
Great call.
It's
definitely a computer. I think if we draft Baker Mayfield, that will re-energize the fans. The city needs new energy, just like Ray Lewis had for almost 2 decades. So Baker Mayfield at number 16.
You're going to have to spend a first-round pick, obviously.
Yeah.
He's not going to play this year, maybe not even in 2019. So
how much energy is he bringing on the bench?
Exactly. He's going to sell some jerseys, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But he's not going to help us win games in the immediate. I mean, I do think we should draft a quarterback because I think they've drafted 2 quarterbacks since Joe got drafted. And
Tyrod and Keith Wenning.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. You have to have somebody. I mean, look what the Patriots are doing. I mean, you get money. Jimmy G is getting paid out there in San Fran, and If you draft a guy and develop him, for, even if he doesn't start for us, you can ship him off or
they flip those picks for quality. Yeah. They've done it throughout Tom Brady's career.
Now, the Bengals would probably do it for
McCarron.
Yeah.
Yeah, they tried with McCarron. The Patriots have done it. They did it with Matt Castle going all the way back to him. They did it with Brissett. They did it with Jimmy Garoppolo. They've done it with Ryan Mallett. So, like, they flipped this guy.
Osweiler's changed hands now a couple times.
Yeah.
The Browns got a pick for him.
But first round is too rich. And as much as I like Baker Mayfield a lot, but I don't think you can – this team needs to, you know, before we rebuild or do something crazy, you need to give as many weapons to Joe and add as many defensive pieces as you can to this team.
Joe can't throw passes to Baker Mayfield, so I'm going to have to rule that one out.
No. Right, and there's still questions about whether he's going to work at the pro level. Like, he was exciting, and I watched a number of his college games. He's fun to watch, but there are still legitimate questions about whether he's going to pan out at the pro level. The other thing, too, is, like, this team is not, if you go Baker Mayfield, I think that's a rebuilding process. Yeah. Like, that's you are. And this team is close. Like, they are, and I think fans probably get tired of hearing, like, the one play away. And I get tired of saying they were one play away from making the playoffs. But they were one play away from making the playoffs. Like, that's the thing that I kind of
but
struggle.
I'm going to go back to my, sorry to keep cutting
off. You're good.
We beat 7 of our 9 wins were against backups or rookie quarterbacks. So, I mean, the schedule
soft schedule.
Yeah, the schedule gets a lot tougher next season.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I agree with that, but there's going to be injuries next year.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Sure. So, like, everybody's, like, looking at it, and you're like, well, you're going to face this, 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 and this quarterback next year. One of those guys is probably going to get hurt, right? Oh, yeah. Or, like, their stud wide receiver or running back is going to get hurt. Like, every year that's going to happen. But I agree with your point. I think right now that this team is kind of caught in a place. I mean, heck, it's been almost like since the franchise's existence. How many years have there been like 13-3 years around here?
Yeah.
It's like even the Super Bowl year. I mean, Ravens, I think we got off to a pretty strong start that year and then kind of cruised down.
Then they lost 4 out of 5 and then they lost 4 out of 5.
But there have not been many instances like that. It's always been, the Ravens have not been one of the New England Patriots like elite teams like the Colts were with Peyton Manning, where every year you just bank on it, you're in the playoffs, hey, we're probably in the divisional round playing for the AFC Championship. And right now in particular, it's almost from the beginning of the Harbaugh era, it's a little bit below that, right? Where you're in this 8-8, 9-7, you're always scratching and clawing for every tiebreaker, and we're always looking at all that stuff.
Yeah.
And to get to a place where you're not putting the season on one play, because that's not a position where you want to be.
No.
You don't want to be in that because you're going to win some and you're going to lose some. And the past 2 years, they've lost both, right? So this team needs to take a step forward to where you're not going into a Week 17 matchup against a hungry Bengals team or whatever, or team looking to send Marvin Lewis out or whatever they were, and praying that you can beat this team, you know?
Yep.
So whatever the step that is, I think this year it's improving on offense. That's the next step for this team.
Yeah, you're right. I remember 11-5 year here and there, but I don't think anything better than that. And
what was the record in 2014? Everybody looks at 2014 and you're like, well, that was a great year. The Ravens went to the playoffs.
Well, they went 10-6.
10-6.
Yeah.
Right. So if what's his name, Kennedy, breaks up that pass and isn't out of position, you know what the Ravens' record is this year?
They're 10-6.
10-6.
And they're on the road in the wild card round. Just
exactly.
Like
so you're season. So like you look at this season. How much worse was it than the 2014 season, where people tend to look back and romanticize it, right? Like, we were so good in 2014. Yeah. That team wasn't really that much better than this team.
Well, but you went and you won a playoff game, and that's the difference.
Right. I agree. Like, but are you telling me the Ravens couldn't have beat the Titans? Couldn't beat the Chiefs this year?
Oh, I agree. I agree. And that's, I think, part of what makes it so painful this year is I think everyone watched those games.
But you have to be careful not to label this team, I think, as a bad team, right? They're not a good enough team to where you're in a position where you can relax a little bit down the stretch and not sweat out every single game and every single season. Yeah. But you're right in the mix, and it's a big lump of teams that's right in that playoff mix. And so they got to get over that hump. Mm-hmm.
That's why I think this offseason is key. I mean, making some big-time splashes in free agency because, it's a neck and neck with like a group of 6 or 7 teams here. So to get past that hump, I think you're going to have to bring in some fresh blood. I don't think the draft picks that we have, I don't see anybody on offense really stepping up. I don't see any of these tight ends. I think Watson will probably retire. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge Max Williams fan, but I don't think I think Nick Boyle is probably the best one we have.
Yeah.
And you look at wide receiver, we talked about that. You got Kenneth Dixon coming back, and our best offensive player is a guy that we picked up off the scrap heap, and Alex Collins. So it's gonna be. I don't know. But every Ravens season I can remember has been like, it's been a gritty team.
Right.
So
here's what I think it comes down to. I think that for this team to
completely kind of rebound, be back in the playoffs, win a playoff game or two, they need to hit the draft out of the park, and they need to have a Saints-like draft. I mean, the Saints last year, they get Marshawn Lattimore, Defensive Rookie of the Year. They get Alvin Kamara, Offensive Rookie of the Year. They get all these guys. Like
Ramchek.
Yeah. So, like, they get five guys who are playing significant roles for their team, and it changed their season around in a hurry. Then you can use free agency to fill certain needs, but you need to have have this draft and get, like, three guys on offense that are producing. You know, like, maybe you get an offensive lineman and you get a receiver, and also you're feeling a lot, or a pass catching tight end. You go get that's just, you know, dream scenario here. Let's play it out. You know, you get Calvin Ridley in the first round, and you get a stud pass catching tight end in the second, and you're like, all right, this is pretty exciting now. You know, things can change.
Yeah, that's actually to a question we got an email from Robert Halbert. Halbert,
tell people how they can email us.
TheLounge@ravens.nfl.net.
Thank
you very much, Garrett.
Yeah.
So Robert says, I guess it's time to get over 4th-and-12. Finally, let's just say the Steelers' loss definitely helped. My question is, what do you think the Ravens can do to ignite the fan base again? Splashy free agent signing, draft a playmaker, etc.
That's why I'm glad I was about to ask you guys a similar question. How much, and I'll ask you guys a question on top of that, how much has the attendance issues, quote unquote, been brought up around here? I mean, obviously, Dick Cass sent a letter out to the season ticket holders. We still haven't had the end of season, you know, State of the Ravens press conference, but I mean, is it a big issue for these guys?
Well, let's start out on the season ending.
One question we probably got more than any other is, what's the deal with the season ending, the State of the Ravens press conference? We don't know. So until we don't get the calls from Steve to say, hey, when should the State of the Ravens be? So, you know,
it's above our pay grade.
That's above our pay grade.
So when we find out, we will definitely let you know.
When we know what the deal is with that, we'll let you know. And then in terms of the attendance stuff, I mean, like, people see it, obviously. You know, Dick's letter, he pointed out that the no-shows were up, and you can look in the stands. I mean, if you have eyes, you can look in there, and you can see there's people who aren't here, you know, when you compare it to previous games. So it's definitely something that people are aware of. And it's what I think, though, you just have to be careful. I think that part of it is being a team that's more fun to watch and all that. I agree. But I think that, like, you have to be careful of, this is my personal opinion, you have to be careful of saying, like, let's just get somebody to energize a team and go get Baker Mayfield because he's going to put fans in the seats.
No.
Like, I grew up a Browns fan, I used to cover the Browns, and, like, that's been something that they've changed. Well, go get Johnny Manziel, he's going to fill the seats. Well, it doesn't work out. What fills the seats in a lot of ways is winning, and so that's something you've got to keep in mind.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's also, you can get into this trap of, well, change is going to fill the seats.
Right.
Well, I thought John Eisenberg brought this up last week. Change doesn't necessarily mean it's going to result in good change. You know, it can be bad change too. You talk about the Browns. Mm-hmm. How many times have they made sweeping changes?
Of course.
And what's their no-shows look like? But to your question, yes, no-shows are a thing that we are looking at. Absolutely. More than people realize. We are attentive to that. The NFL is a business. We're a business too. We want to have a good business. And putting fans, having fans come out, not only is good for business, it helps us win games, which is good for business. Mm-hmm. You know, we want a loud stadium.
Yeah.
So that is something that we talk about. They have meetings. We're not in these meetings. But there's meetings on how to make the game day experience better every single week.
Yeah.
Every week we talk about this. Like, the highest paid people, the biggest people in our organization get together and say, how do we make it better? Because we really do care. Like, we want fans to come out and support the team. And I think winning will primarily be the driver in that.
I don't remember a time in the past where I've seen so many people on Facebook trying to sell their tickets. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if we need to branch out to non-season ticket holders, because everything coming out from Dick Cass and Bisciotti is to season ticket holders, and they're the ones that are spending their money up front to go to every game. But you got to attract. I mean, I've been to a couple of tailgates, the Jimmy's Seafood tailgates, right across the street from the stadium. You can throw a rock there, and a lot of people leave. I mean, they're leaving to go watch the game somewhere else, or, you know, I don't know if it's the price of tickets, I don't know if the state of the city, and there's a lot of things that go in with that. But I mean, we got to get these casual fans back into the stadium, because I mean, it's a huge difference on game day when you have a stadium full of Ravens fans versus when it's half and half of Steelers fans, Ravens fans.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And I think that, like, this is something that there's probably conversations happening in 29 out of the 32 NFL team headquarters, you know, just about how to improve the game day experience and fill up those seats. Like, you know, ticket prices across the sports landscape are just so expensive, you know, like, and so I saw on the divisional round, I think it was wild card weekend. I forget what the exact stat was, but
every game, I believe, on Wild Card Weekend had seats that you could buy for under face value on the secondary ticket market. And so, you know, that's happening. That's things that are happening for every team around the league. So, I mean, it's definitely something that, like, to Ryan's point, that people are talking about and are working on. But I just don't think it's an issue centralized here. And I also think it is. There's the football component. I think there's a whole host. I think viewing habits change. I think the game experience, the home experience is so good. There's the issues with the city. I think all of that, like, you combine all of that, and there's this kind of this fire
for sure
that we saw this year.
Well, I think it's more of a question to you. I mean, since you're our fan representative, what do you think, what do fans want? You know, what can we do as an organization that's going to bring some of those, you know, disenfranchised fans back?
It's a tough question, man. I mean, we talked about the play on the field. I think that's 80% of it. I don't know. I mean, I enjoy going to games, but I can't spend, and this is nothing to change. I have a two-year-old now, so my situation is a little different. I get 2 days off a week, and I would have to spend one of it, you know, drinking adult beverages and watching football, which is fun. It's fun to do. Yeah. I don't mind doing it.
But you're not going to get the clearance to do that 16 times a year?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's tough. There's not going to be a quick fix. There's not a one answer. And I think a lot of the businesses around Baltimore have expressed the same thing, that they're seeing a decline in, you know, people coming in. You know, it's tough. The NFL and the Ravens were on top for so long. I remember you couldn't even get a ticket for so long. And it's, you know, I'm sure, like you said, I'm sure it's across the board. I'm sure a lot of teams besides the Ravens are dealing with it. But, you know, the state of Baltimore City doesn't help either. People don't want to go down there sometimes, you know, especially for night games.
I really do think that a lot of it will be helped by making the team more exciting to watch on offense. I really feel like that plays into it. You know, it is at times, even you know, sitting in the press box and you see the offense come off the field and they're just being booed by their home fans. Yeah. Now that happens everywhere when offenses have three straight punts in a row or whatever. But, like, this team has been a struggle to watch on offense for years.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. If the defense isn't, like, the 2000 dominant defense, then it can be tough. So I think that's going to be something that's addressed on the football side this year, which will help on the business side.
Cool. Well, Phil, before we wrap up here, is there any other kind of parting thoughts that you have for us before we wrap things up and go hear what Wink Martindale has to say his presser today?
Not really. I appreciate you guys having me, and you know, I'm going to be a fan for life. I host I spend a night of every week hosting a podcast about the team, so I'm not going anywhere, and I have faith in this team. I think the front office and the coaching staff have shown us enough, you know, the organization as a whole has shown us that we need to have faith, because they've done it in the past, and I think, you know, a couple quick changes, and I think this team could be back where it was. Just it has to happen, you know.
Yeah, awesome. Well, fans, give Phil's podcast a listen, as well as Purple Rain Show. You can find that on iTunes.
Yes, you can.
And so give that you know, it's a competing podcast, so it's an enemy.
You listen to us.
We can give you props on there,
too. I'm just kidding.
You listen to us on our way in, and you can listen to the Purple Rain podcast on the way home.
Yep.
There you go.
So
perfect.
We split the time.
Yep. Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, thank you, Phil.
Thanks,
appreciate
man.
It, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it, boys.
Yes, thank you.